All right, guys, welcome to the Reverie Podcast. I have the incredible honor today of interviewing Francisco Domine from Brazil. You are the owner and creator of Domine Symbols, and you are my blank supplier. You are my symbol blank supplier. So thank you so much for agreeing to chat with me today.
Thank you. Okay, trying to not struggle with the English, but I will try.
It will be great.
Okay, I'm very pleased to be here, and let's talk about symbols.
Yes. So I first became aware of you probably a couple years ago. You were like a, how to say it, like you were like a mystical being, because I would talk to all of my other independent symbolsmith buddies, and they'd be like, oh yeah, I went to Brazil and studied with Domine. And I kept hearing your name, and it was like everybody that I loved had come to Brazil and learned from you. And that was the first interaction. And then we got to meet last year at the Chicago Drum Show officially for the first time. And I've been using your blanks for maybe about a year now. And so it's an honor. You are in the truest sense of the word, you are a master at what you do. So we could honestly go in a million directions with this, but I would love to know just first off how you, like, what's your condensed version of your story? How did you get to this place?
Condensed version is very difficult, but I'll try.
Yes, very.
I'm a drummer. I was a drummer, and I look at my symbols and I ask to myself, how to make a symbol? And I didn't find any information about it. So I'm trying to figure out how to make a symbol in not information. And the lack of information make me starting my researching, and I'm digging in and trying to get the more information I could at the time. And I look at my symbol, okay, if I hammer my symbol, what will happen? And I'm trying to figure out and doing my mistakes and screwed my symbols. And suddenly I'm starting to understand how to doing acoustic modifications. And I'm starting to understand acoustically what each part in the symbol do in the whole symbol. And I'm starting to control my craft, let's say. But I'm getting the ready symbol and change to another thing. But I want to understand how to make a symbol. Then I figure out that it's from Turkey. Okay, I'm starting to write to many companies and nobody answered me. Then I receive an email from Amedia, and you are from Brazil. We love coffee from Brazil. What I did, I went to a coffee manufacturer here, and I bought a exportation pack and put a media address and send it. Then we start talking, and then I went to Istanbul, and it's cold as hell, and it is not funny.
So yes.
cold, and a lot of snow, and I'm hanging on the I'm knocking the door, and they said, okay, you're not allowed to entry. Okay, I put my hook, and I sit down on the floor, and I'm wait until they allowed me to enter.
So wow.
They allowed me to enter. I'm going, and I'm freaking out. So I looked at everything, but I didn't see. You know, I'm crazy because I'm trying to figure out what happened, and I cannot see nothing. I cannot see. Then I get in, and in the end of the story, I come back to Brazil with some blanks. A 14 pair, 16, 18, 21, 22. I went to my mother's house in the backyard. That was my shop. I put the blank on my anvil, and I'm not even had a symbolsmith hammer.
Yeah.
My, had a ball peen hammer.
Yes.
And I look at the blanket. Okay. I know how to get a red symbol and change the sound.
Yes.
But how can I make a symbol from this piece of bronze? Okay, I don't have idea. Then I turn off the light and go back to my work. I'm starting having doing classes, drum classes, and play at night and do my gigs. Then to fly to Istanbul, I asked my friend to borrow me his card, so credit card, to buy the tickets.
Yes.
So I come back and I forgot the blanks. Then my phone ring and I, hello. Then my friend say, hey man, you know, I need to pay my credit card. I need the money. Oh my God, I'm screwed because I don't have any money. So I went to my mother's house. During the way from my home to my mother's house, I found another friend that said, yeah, Francisco, I know you went to Turkey, you know, I know you can do a lot of symbols, you are the master. And I say, okay, I'm gonna make a setup for you. And he paid me, and I paid a card, and I screwed because I now I need to make this blanks into symbols. And yes. I did it. And this is my beginning.
Yeah.
Then I'm starting importing blanks from Turkey. So I use it Amidia, I use it Mustafa Duril, I use it, let's say, Masterworks blanks.
Yes.
A lot of blanks from Turkey. Then suddenly Mustafa Duril sent me a message on Facebook and invite me to visit him in Turkey. And I went and I learned a lot from him. Then we become very good friends. And he came to Brazil, helped me to build the first factory, first foundry, and the whole madness begins. So I understand that my way to hammer symbols, the real way to hammer symbols, the traditional methods to hammer symbols, and I mix all together. And I lived in Japan 6 years.
Okay.
And I studied at Yamaha School of Music there, a sound engineer.
Okay.
So I'm starting to figure out the acoustics versus the physics.
Yeah.
The symbol construction, and doing my best to develop everything. So we established the factory. We start producing the blanks. My rolling mill. I did it the first project, first draws, and we did the rolling mill, and it broke. And again and again and again and again. Then we figure out and fix the gears, fix the transmissions, the rolls and everything. And we build up the whole factory, and we start to hire people. And now we are 38 people working in the factory.
Wow.
And we have a foundry, rolling mill, a section that we press the bells and do the tempering. We have presses to press the profile.
Yeah.
Rotary hammer, the hammer that is
I guess it would be we call it, I guess there's a trip, it'd be like a trip hammer or whatnot.
Yes. The hand hammering, we have a lot of dies to change the patterns on the hammers. Lathes, we have a machine to trim the edges.
Yeah.
And quality control. I'm now in the quality control room that now Eduardo Bucolini works here, and he checked the symbols, and that's my Christmas every day. And I'm starting doing my best to to spread my knowledge, you know.
Yes.
And I think more important thing I have in the factory is my people, the people that work with me, is my gold. They are my gold, you know. And I don't hide any information from
us.
Because you are, my conception is, you are an artist. I'm an artist. Here I have a lot of artists working. So if you want a Timothy Roberts ride, don't ask me to do it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. This is the, if you want a Picasso, don't ask Van Gogh to do that.
Right.
The same analogy.
Yes. And I will say, you, when we met in Chicago, you were instantly sharing your knowledge. Like, that was one thing. It is true that you don't hide anything, and there's no need to, because I've said this to other people in the past. It is so difficult to do this craft. It's so difficult to make symbols that it requires so much devotion to the craft to really learn how to do it well, that, you know, being open and sharing your knowledge doesn't, I don't see it as like a danger, as dangerous to your brand, or, oh no, this person's going to take over and do it better than you. It is like you say, it's like everyone is, we all have our own voice, and our instruments have their own character that can't be replicated by someone else. And so it is like, it's a way to carry on the tradition. And I wanted to ask you, because you said that you went to Turkey and they turned you away. They wouldn't teach you, but it was Mustafa Duril that actually, he agreed to teach you. Was this something that that the other people in Turkey didn't want him to do? Was it something that, was it controversial that he decided to train you and help you set up your factory?
So it's a very tough thing to talk, but let's say Mustafa, he is very different from the other people that I went and I met there. And he's a very, 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 very kind person. And his family is wonderful. And apparently, three sons, don't want to dig in the business.
Mm.
And I'm appeared. Apparently, I'm Mustafa's son.
Yes, okay.
They passed away the knowledge.
Yes. So he didn't have anyone to pass the knowledge down to, and so he picked you.
Yes.
To be the one he would pass the knowledge down to. That's amazing.
Yes. Kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a lot of things in the factory, as I told you. And I have here Nicky Moon, Mike Mongello, Philip, a lot of other people. Marcus from Argentina, was my first student, and he's working with me now here.
Again, really?
Again, and he worked two months here and go to Argentina, stay 1 month in Argentina and come back here. And I learned from him, he learned from me. And so that's not a master's, you know, the knowledge.
Yes.
You need to always understand and figure out how to make your things better.
Yes.
If you look just on you, you're not able to improve yourself.
Agreed. Yes. Yes. It's true. I mean, I've been doing it, you know, I've had my company for about 9 years now. But I've only been working on symbols for about 5, and I'm constantly changing my techniques. I'm constantly changing my approach. I'll get a new technique. I'll learn something from you, or I'll learn something from Paul Francis or whatnot, and I'll try it out. And then I'll be like, oh, this is amazing. I've got to do this every time. And then I do it a bunch of times. And then I realize the limitations it has. And then I go, okay, well, I'm going to stop doing that now. And I'm going to do something different. And there's this constant, I feel like there's a constant evolution to the craft, because there isn't just one way of making a symbol. There's like you were saying, there's many different techniques. There's traditional Turkish techniques. There's Asian techniques. There's all kinds of, you know, hand hammered, machine hammered, how you blend those, that you really, you can learn all, it's important to learn all those techniques, but being able to assimilate it and create your own technique is important, I think. And I haven't made my own technique at all. I'm developing. I don't know that I'll ever land like, this is how I make a symbol. It's always going to be this journey. There's little techniques that kind of get blended and get changed depending on the blank, because every blank responds differently. Unique. You know, they're all unique. So
yes, all blanks are one of a kind. So you need to figure out how to fix the mistakes you did.
Yes.
All the time. But when you start doing your craft, you look at a piece of bronze. You are not able to see and understand the micro things that happens along when you start.
Yes.
While you are working with and getting your experience from your craft, you're starting understand and see the movements. Oh, now I need to fix this bump, because later it will be a problem there.
Yes.
It's a very takes too long to understand.
Yes.
And you always will understand. And for example, when you start listening classical music, you never heard the classical music. You start just starting. You say, okay, this is classical music. You keep listening. Then you say, oh, now the strings and the woods and the percussion. Then you keep in, oh, first violin, second violin, third violin, and so on. This is the same thing.
I love that. I've never heard anyone make that connection, but that is, you know, it's the more, it's like you're kind of, it's like you're viewing it with a microscope. You start out, you have the whole picture and it's confusing. You don't know, you know, how the intricate details work with each other. You don't know how to see individual aspects or even perceive what an individual, like you can't perceive the first violin and what the line that it's playing. Cause you just hear the orchestra and
It's a matter of time. It's a matter of the devotion. You need to hammer a lot of symbols and make a lot of mistakes to understand.
Yes.
I can teach you that. I can teach you that.
Yes. You make every single mistake. I say it like you, the way I like to say it is you have to find the boundaries, and you can't find the boundaries unless you push against them, unless you explore to the outer reaches. How thin can the symbol be before it cracks? You know, how tall can it be before it cracks? Or how tall can it be before you hate the sound? You have to find the extremes, and then you from there can dial it back. And you have to find the extremes multiple times. You have to find the boundary over and over and over before you start learning how to dial it back and go, okay, I want to make a tall profile symbol, but I want it to have some sibilance and some life to it. You know, you learn to start seeing with a microscope and seeing the shape at a closer dimension, as opposed to just, oh, it needs to be tall. And so you just hammer it until it's this huge shape, but then it lacks versatility. It lacks, you know, but being able to find the characters that you want in a symbol in a smaller zone, you know, I talk a lot about like making a low profile symbol that has all this complexity and kind of high fidelity sound to it. And, you know, making symbols that shouldn't be beautiful, that should be a little bit more bland. How do you make them beautiful? And it really is about zooming in and doing these very complex things, you know?
Yes. So when I, For example, I'm grabbing a flat black.
Yes.
When you look at, you see a flat black. I see a lot of things that you cannot see because you haven't the experience that I have.
Yes, right.
I can see the microstructures where the crystals it's elongating, you know, where the position that I'm starting hammering. It's important because when going through the rolling mill, we're stretching. So instead of being like a square or you know, this figure is starting doing stretching and being like a drumstick. Just this is a figure to talk.
Yes.
If you want to understand where the way the best way to start hammering, you need to look all the grains and starting where the grains is more elongated, you know. Because if you the grains are like this and strike here, it's less efficient. You need to strike first here. But to understand this, you need to understand the blanks, and you need to understand the microstructure and what it works in the symbol. Everybody says that okay, the bronze becomes more stiff when it's become older.
Yes.
Older the blank, stiff the metal. The analogy that I do, you know, the sugar, the crystal.
Yeah.
You get a jar and put the crystal, the sugar inside the jar and close, and you shake. Everything's loose. Rest for 1 year. When you grab it, it's a one block.
Yeah, it's clumped together.
Yes. The same things happen on the blanks, on the crystals, because it tends to set down. And, you know, copper wants to be with copper and tin wants to be with tin, and it moves.
Yes.
You can see, no, but it moves.
Yeah. And that's the evidence of this is, you know, if we play a vintage symbol, you know, from the 1960s, it feels and responds so much different than a symbol that was just made, you know.
Yes, and you got more stick definition.
Yes. Yeah, it's become more brittle. And that brittleness is translating as a tighter sound in the stick. Yeah.
And also, there's two things that always talking about is stiffness and tension. When I talk about tension, I'm talking about, you know, the symbol, the
yes.
edge, the tension on the outer edge.
How much does it move when you crash it, right?
Yes. More I have tension on the symbol, more tight is the edges. So it moves less movement, yes.
Yes.
It's different than stiffness. That is how stiff the material is.
It's like a compression, like compression, the compression of the metal. Yeah.
For example, if you press a bell and you hammer a blank, a bell on a blank, it will sound differently. Kind of more, you have more definition in the pressed bell because the material has many deformations and more thick.
Yes.
But if you do a jazz symbol that wants the beautiful wash sound, more overtones, you must hammer a bell. Otherwise you don't have more, let's say, more close to 90 degree between bell and the body.
Yes.
More separate sound from the bell to the body. Or I'm saying that if you strike the bell sounds like a bell and a little bit washy on the cymbals.
Yes.
If the transition, the bridge between the bell and the body is more like this.
Yes. It gradually smooths into the body.
You strike the bell and you can hear the movement on the edges. Yes, yeah. It's open and sound and the wash comes out.
Yes, we say like a separated sound or an integrated sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is beautiful. We are talking about a few topics, and there's a lot of things to do with these two topics in symbol making. How can I do the same thing you are done? You know,
yeah.
Your approach is different than mine. We are talking about the same thing, but the way we see things are different.
Yes. And our ears are different. How we hear words like complex or dark or bright, and how what we perceive as those sounds differs from person to person. And so we really are just aiming after what we're hearing, and what we're hearing can be dictated to by what we've ingested. So you went to music school, you know, you studied classical music, you studied audio engineering, you have learned, you've taught your ears how to perceive sound. For me, I've listened to countless hours of jazz records and classical records and Afro-Cuban and Afrobeat and rap and rock and all kinds of music, and that music is a part of my palette that I use to aim at whatever kind of sound I'm looking for.
And the most important things is when you are thinking in how to make a symbol, if you start your symbol without having any idea, you make a symbol. And what you need to understand that the symbol, when it's ready, finished, is finished. Don't try to figure out how to fix that bump or that. It's finished.
Yes. And how do you know that? What would you say? How do you know that it's finished?
Yeah, you say to yourself. You need to understand. You need to feel. You need to feel it. Because, okay, it's done. If you look at, you see a lot of other problems. If you dig in, fix all the problems, you will never stop to hammer. You never stop to figure out how to make the perfect symbols.
Yes. I find that when I'm at the point now where I feel like I have enough experience to, you know, I'll see the problems and I'll say, I want to fix them. But I've learned to stop myself, because if I fix all of the problems, you know, all of the problems within reason, if I fix them, the sound will be boring. I won't like the sound. Whereas if I leave this weird little lump at the edge, or if I leave this thing and I'm just going off of how it sounds, and I say, this sounds beautiful, but there's a lump. You know, if I go to fix that, or if I go to fix an issue with the lathe or a little scratch, you know, the lathe kind of like jumped a little bit and I got a weird gap in my lathe grooves. If I go after that, I usually make the sound boring and a little less inspiring. Whereas the cymbals that have kind of a wild, chaotic nature to them, they can be stunning. They can be perfect for some drummer.
Personality.
Yes, right. So I'm in a place now where I'm trying to make cymbals that have a sense of controlled chaos. And what I mean by that is whenever I play a Spizzichino ride, I see that he intentionally made his cymbals kind of chaotic, like to sound chaotic. He wasn't trying to make clean, pristine sounds. He was trying to make this chaos in his cymbal, but it was very contained and it was very masterful in how he sort of reined it in and kind of put the boundaries around the sound so that it was functional in a musical situation. So it's like, I don't like pursuing perfection so much, because I find that perfection sort of equals boring. It might be perfect for some music. Like if you play a Peisty ride, it's so clean, you know, in general, they're so clean and they might work great for a certain context, but that's not the sound I have in my head. I'm looking for something sort of in the middle between chaotic and perfect. And it's a never ending search, I think.
Yes, you need to figure out how to control the spectrum.
Mm.
For example, for let's say I need to do two rides. They will be one of a kind each. We cannot replicate let's say the exactly symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. But we can figure out how to control the sustain, the explosion, the tone, the bell, the stick definition, the articulation. We can control it, but it's not the same. It's mm-hmm. almost the same, but not the same.
So yes. You
need to always understand and figure out how to work with.
Yes. And a lot of it is about letting go of some control. Because if you try to manipulate the symbol and say, you are going to sound like this, and you hammer it. And if you do that, oftentimes you end up not paying attention to what the blank is telling you. And you can't make it sound the best that it could, because you're trying to force your expectations onto the piece of metal. So in a way, there's this sense of having to let go and allow whatever happens to happen. You know, I'm going to make the symbol and see what comes out. Obviously, you have all of your techniques and you know how to do, like what you said, control the spread, control the stick definition and the tone, and make sure it's kind of within some boundary that you would classify as this sounds good, or this sounds like it would function in music. But beyond that, you have to have a separated, like allow it to kind of just come out of you, which is where the study and the practice comes in. Because if you study enough, if you practice enough, if you make all of the mistakes, that knowledge is kind of ingrained in your body. And so in your mind, I feel like you can let go a little bit and just allow the work to do itself in a way.
Yes, working and understand and practicing will lead you not to avoid mistakes, but to fix the mistakes easily.
Mm, yes, yeah.
Because you always will make mistakes, symbol making, talking, let's say. You also always make mistakes because sometimes you are tired, sometimes you have some aches, sometimes you are angry, sometimes you are happy, and everything that you are feeling will affect your symbol.
Yes. I'm very interested to know, because it seems to me like okay, I'll back up a little bit. Sometimes when you approach someone who is an artist or a craftsman, sometimes they tend to be a little bit more on one side or the other of this spectrum, where on this side we have the artist, and it's the kind of the person that's kind of out in the clouds, and they have all this very abstract way of approaching things. And then on the other side, you have the technician, which is like, this is how it's done. A, B, C, D, step 1, 2, 3. When I talk to you, it feels like you are both of those things kind of at the same time. Like you have this very technical knowledge and understanding, but there's this understanding that you articulate about the craft, the artistry of the craft. How did you come to that place?
I don't know, but I like to study. I like to work, and the feeling is the first thing you need to hear. The rest, let's say the math you mm-hmm. are doing, are just tools you are, as an artist, doing your work, do your art. This is the my approach. I want to do something. Okay, what I have, this is my weapons. I'm gonna use this to do that and figure out that. But all this knowledge leads me, not 100%, but to see in the future how it, what I have to do to avoid problems and to achieve the correct sound, because on my conceptions, the sounds matter more than everything. I don't know if the symbol is beautiful. If the sound is beautiful, everything must be beautiful.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I love that. I'm inspired by that. I think I tend to be a little bit more on the artsy fartsy side, where I can be lost in the clouds. And as far as me being able to say, I know how to achieve this by these steps, I tend to be more this way on this side. And I want to have that balance, because what you're saying is balance. You're talking about, you have the tools, the math is the tools. It's the hammer and the anvil, and you know what this hammer will do versus that hammer. And you know, compression, deformation, you know how to manipulate the techniques in a way to achieve the ballpark of a certain sound. And then beyond that, it'll come out how it comes out. And I really find that to be very inspiring. You know, one thing I've really loved about your blanks, because I sourced blanks from Turkey for years, and I always found that the Turkish blanks kind of had a character that was just dark. It had a darker tone. There were more imperfections in the metal, which I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because there was a sonic result from these imperfections and inconsistencies. When I started using your blanks, I noticed they were much cleaner. The shapes were much more uniform. Even if I had bowls or whatever in the shapes, it was in a uniform way, and it was easy to kind of manipulate in the way that I needed, which I found has given me more freedom on the back end to get dirty sounds and dark sounds if I want, but I can also achieve brighter and cleaner sounds that I was never really able to achieve. And so talk to me a little about your process in your factory, because it seems like the blanks you use come out better. I like them more, and I don't know why that is. I have some guesses, but.
So at first, I'm an artisan. I'm a symbol maker. And everything starts because I want to make symbols. I'm starting the foundry because I want to understand and figure out how to make the bronze. I'm starting rolling because I need the blanks. I need to have the control of the whole process, because I love make symbols. I love hammer. I love lathe. And I was buying from Turkey. If someone in Turkey said to me, okay, I don't want to sell you blanks anymore, my business closed. Finished. Yep. This is why I'm starting researching. Of course, because I have a lot of curiosity. But so in the factory, we have Tim. That's not you.
Yes.
this is the most expensive metal in the alloy. And we use copper. And I show you like this. It's a kind of a little pieces of copper, and the both are 99.99% pure. Okay, because the copper not so pure, but the tin is, it needs to be so pure, because we have a lot of problems if we had a lead, aluminum, and another things, we screwed the entire alloy. So we mix all together, we melt the copper, add the tin, and do the mixtures, and we do a metal cleaning process that's add some carbon. We throw charcoal and mix all together to avoid oxygen on the alloy, because the oxygen will bound easily, and we have with hydrogen, we have problems during the castings, little explosions, all the castings become with a small holes, burrows.
Yeah, like little, yeah, it's like, it almost looks like a little worm burrows, is burrowing through the bronze.
More like that. Let's say, you understand, a lot of little holes.
Holes. It's like air bubbles. Is it like air bubbles?
Yes, air bubbles. Gas bubbles, anyway.
Yes.
So by this, we do the clean, and we grab the crucible, 75 kilos, put in a device, and we pour on the pans. While we're doing that, the person that is pouring needs to understand and feel the right amount of material that is dropping in the pan. Because if you want a 22 ride, that will be a ingot, let's say 3.5 kilos, needs to be 3.5 kilos or something closer. So he needs to understand how much material put in the pans.
Mm.
Okay, we grab, while it's a rigid, we grab the ingots, let's say this one.
Mm.
And it sounds. We grab the ingots, hot, and we classify and weight and do the annotations, the marks on top of each ingot, and let it rest from one day to another.
Mm.
While it's completely cool, we grab it and we make some visual inspections. For example, this is down because there's a hole, a gas hole in the bottom.
Ah, yes.
And we are allowed to see that because it's grinded.
Yes.
So every imperfection, every drop that stick in the ingot, we need to clean it to avoid problems during the rolling mill.
Yeah.
Everything, every ingot that we, let's say, okay, it's not proper to go to the another process. It's come back to the foundry. And we do it again and remelt it and make another symbol. So we move to another, while it's all clean and with the weights, we go to the another process, that the rolling mill, that's a huge oven. We're working with 750 degrees Celsius. We put it in an oven and a lot of heat. It's a cherry red, and you passing through the rolling mill and squeeze it and elongating the microstructures, the grains, and then go back to the oven and flip it over to the other side. So round. While we are squeezing, it's elongated. So I'm passing through the rolling mill this way.
Yeah.
Then the blanks like this. We change it the direction.
And is this kind of create like a cross structure that keeps that structure, makes it,
yes. Okay, when we have a blank that we have the thickness right and the diameter right, it's ready to press the bell. We change to another, here we change to another room, that's the tempering room, that we put it again in the oven. But, you know, while we are doing this rotations, oven, rolling mill, squeeze it, go back to the rolling and go back to the rolling mill, go back to the oven, go back to the rolling mill. On the top of the symbol is appear a oxide. It's a dark oxide on top of the symbol. So it's a tin oxide. When it's finished, it's like this.
Mm.
This is a blank that it's not tempered.
Mm. So rather brittle, I'd say.
Rather brittle, because let's start talking about another subject, that's a phase diagram. it's to become too way deep. Okay. So when you're talking about B20, it has phases. Each phase means that the mineral will have some physical properties. Mm. Yes, physical. Very difficult for me to translate in English. Physical yes. Physical properties. What I need? I need a phase that the bronze, the B20 bronze, is malleable, so I can work with. Also, needs to be some kind of a spring response that it tends to come back to the initial shape. For example, let's say this. I grab a paper. This is my blank, and I will hammer the blank. Okay, I finish. You know, it's smooth.
Yes.
It tends to. Okay, I want to be back in the same shape I was.
Yes.
With the metal, it's the same thing, but it takes too long to understand that, and sometimes we cannot see.
Yes, it's imperceptible to the eye.
Yes. Sometimes you can see, yes, but in most of the times you cannot see. So back in the we are need to freeze the phase of this blank that's very rigid into a phase that we can work with. This is why we do the heat treatment. That's not tempering, it's heat treatment. Tempering is wrong.
Ah, okay.
We say heat treatment because we need to freeze the phase. So I'm gonna show you something.
Yes.
Let's say.
Oh, look at that. If you're just listening, I think it cut out the volume of that. He just smashed the blank that was not quenched. He smashed it against the table and it shattered like glass.
Okay, so we have some choice. Look at.
Oh yeah, that's a problem.
we have a choice now. We can leave the oxidation, or can remove it before the heat treatment. Why we do that? Okay. Remember, we have oxidation. Oxidation is something that's on like a blanket that will mute the sound.
Yes.
So if you leave it, you know you have a blackish blank with a oxidation stick on top of the blank.
Yes.
It will sound more dry because it's something that's smooth, it's muffing.
Yes. Yeah, muffling. Yeah, muting, muffling, yeah.
It's muffling the sound. So we lived, we do the tempering, that is, it means we put it in oven again and we go to the press and press the bell. We have a lot of bell shapes. We decide the bell we want to press it. We back to the blackish, drier blanks. We go back into the oven. We can heat it again, quench in water. We're done.
Mm.
Or we can wash it with salt.
Yes.
Then we put it in the oven, and that's a chemical reaction that release the whole surface,
oxy yeah. surface,
and it becomes beautiful like this.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I'm used to seeing. I have some symbols that I've had without the salt wash, and it dulls your lathe bits almost instantly. It's so hard.
And that another thing that you can control. So the temperature window that we can work on, the freeze temperature, that if I let's say I go too high in the temperature, Okay, the symbol become more malleable.
Mm.
The sound becomes more low. If I lower the temperature during the quenching, the sound becomes more high.
Mm, interesting.
I can control it while I'm doing the tempering. The amount of time it stays in the oven, for example, I'm using gas, propane, in my oven, and I'm in the whole factory. I'm using 1.5 tons kilos of propane per week.
Wow.
So the way that the flames arrive on the surface of the symbol will react with the symbol and the sound will change. So we have also the where to place the symbol inside the oven to control the temperature and the way that the flames in make some influence on the whole material.
And that's why you probably have to change the direction, because if the flame is hitting just on this side, you want to flip it around so it hits the other side maybe the next time. So you're
more or less like this, but yeah. The reasons on the oven that the flames strike directly on the top, or the flames don't strike the symbols, but the temperature is the same, you know?
And that changes the outcome.
That changes the outcome, yes.
Wow.
So we have salt without salt. We have the temperature that we're quenching it in water. We have the place that we put the symbol inside the oven and another things.
Wow.
For example, in the top of the oven, we have more efficient heat from the bricks because it's refractory.
Okay.
So if you grab the blanks and put it a little bit up in the oven, it will be heated faster than just putting the floor.
Wow. So if really, as many things as we can do on the back end to change sound, there's as many things on the front end when you're actually making that blank that you can do to sort of affect how it's going to tend to respond to the cold forming later.
If you use a charcoal and wood fire oven, you need to put the charcoal on the floor. What it does, it makes a insulation from the bricks and the symbol, and some air comes out in the bottom, and the charcoal is starting burn again and make some insulation, and then you need to make some flames around the oven, and the entire heat that will heat the symbols will become from the logs that's burning, and the top ceiling. That's kind of refractory heat on the symbol. So it's very different when you use charcoal, when you use electrical, when you use gas, and everything is different.
Wow. And would you say that, because you were talking about it being, you know, higher temperature, obviously the material's softer, you get a lower pitch. And you were also talking about, you know, you squeeze the paper and you let it go and it kind of moves. It's like wanting to get back to where it was in that like relaxed state. I'm sure there's a better way of saying it, but this is, I've used the analogy of a guitar string and how if a guitar string doesn't have any tension on the tuning peg, then it can't make any sound. But the more you start to tune that up and pull it tight, this is what allows the cymbal or the string in that instance, but this is what allows a cymbal to actually have a sustaining note. You know, that's why we need tin as a part of this alloy, because if it was just a copper cymbal, you know, we wouldn't.
Because the copper, it has some physical properties that, let's say, more you hammer the copper, more stiff it comes. If you need to hit it again and make tension relief, and then you can start it again and start it again. With B20, if you hit it again, you lose the tensions, okay, but also you lose the shape.
Yes, yeah. And that's so because of the tin.
You can do tension relief with fire on B20, but you need to understand what you are doing. Otherwise, you are screwed everything and it becomes brittle again.
Yes, yeah. And so, yeah, and that's where we maybe touch on this really quick, but the companies will say, oh, this is our entry-level cymbal. This is a brass cymbal or a B8 cymbal. And what it's talking about really is the alloy has a lower percentage of that tin content, not in brass, obviously, but B8 bronze has a lower concentration.
What means in this B20, B8, B15, B12, B is bronze.
Yes.
Let's say B20, bead bronze, 20% of tin inside the alloy. Bronze is a copper-based alloy with add tin.
Yes. And then, so it makes sense. I describe, yeah, go ahead.
If you get the same copper and instead of add tin, you add zinc, you have brass.
Ah, okay. This is not something I knew. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Learn something every new. Learn something new every day. That's super interesting. I had no idea. So what I was going to mention though is the tin content. When the tin content is lower, you have more of the copper, and the copper is an extremely soft metal, and its ability to produce sound or sustain is less. And so, you know, obviously there's maybe a better way of saying that, but when you play entry level cymbals, they tend to be heavier because they need more mass to be able to produce the same amount of or like a musical sound.
Yes.
And it's why if someone comes to me and says, hey, can you modify my B8 Sabian? I usually say no, because if they want it to be thin, like a jazz ride, if I lay the B8 cymbal to be the same weight as a B20 cymbal, there's going to be two wildly different sounds coming from those
cymbals
because of that tin content.
B20, B21, B22, B18, B19, B8, B whatever, they are all different metals. They are physical properties that belongs only on that particular alloy. Mm. For example, if you grab a B8 blank and you are a monster drummer and you use a 2B sticks and you hit it with your entire force, it tends to do that movement and you do a lot of pressure and it stays like this when you stop. It's deformed.
Ah, yes.
Because it tends to hold the excessive pressure and memorize it while you are doing that the same thing on a B8, B20. You strike with your entire force, it will do that and not hold this, and it breaks.
Yeah, because it wants to go down and then it wants to spring back.
So yes. So the B8 tends to deform, B20 tends to deform and come back to the original position. So B20 holds the sound more than B8.
Mm.
B8 tends to crack less than B20.
Yes.
What is the best one? Depends.
Yeah.
It's not the both metal has his own qualities.
Yeah.
You need to pick the best sound to your purpose.
Yes. Yeah, for my purpose, it's going to be B20 all the way. I'm going to...
Yes, my is the same as mine. So right. You can understand that the difference between a pipe cymbal and, let's say, another brand, whatever brand that's a B8, the B8 is the same. But the amount of work on the symbol will make the entire difference in sound.
Yes. That's why, I mean, Paiste has made non-B20 alloy symbols that sound great. And whereas non-B20 for most other brands is just their cheap entry-level symbol. And Paiste actually makes high-end symbols that are made from non-B20 material.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Okay, I believe we are lost in the subject.
I don't even know where we were, but
okay. We are talking about the entire process in the factory that allowed, so stopping the oven, the quenching.
Yes.
So we have a blank without the bell without a hole, and the symbol is not round. So we drill a hole in the center and we cut it almost round in the rough cut. And then we can start hammering or pressing or whatever and make the symbol. So as, for example, for you ordered a 20 ride symbol, 1.5 millimeter thick. We do the rough cut, then we put it in our device and we smooth the edge and deliver you right away in the correct size you want with the smooth edges. So avoid you to trim the edges again.
Yes.
Sometimes you need, but then most of the cases, no.
Yes. And that's how I receive my blanks. And then I take them to my anvil and with my hammer start shaping. And it's fascinating. I am interested a little bit. I mean, we can wrap this up whenever you're ready, but I'm very interested in here's a question for you. So pre-pressed profiles.
Okay.
Do you have multiple shapes that you will pre-press them in, or is there just one shape you'll press them in and then do any kind of hammering you want to do on top of that?
Okay. Well, what we do here, we have a press shape that's kind of my approach of hammering at first. I do the first hammering session. What I'm calling the first hammering session because it makes the flat blank becomes a symbol. Starting the curve. All my dies here are prepared to press the symbol and get me the first shape. It's not too high profile, it's a little bit lower profile. Because if I want a bright, a custom sound, I can do a custom sound hammering by hand. It's not possible because you need to avoid the hammering marks. You know, every little spot of hammering marks on the symbol tends to has his own particular voice. Like, you know the steel drum?
Yes. Yes.
It's the same thing in the symbol. So I need to avoid this because when you starting add the whole kind of frequencies, and let's say we start add frequencies, and it becomes like a white noise.
Mm-hmm.
This is, or for a translating for the drummers, the symbol makers, glossary is a wash sound.
Yes.
The wash sound is the summatory, is correct, this terminology?
Yeah.
The summatory of all frequencies inside the symbol.
Symmetry, right? Is that it?
No symmetry, no. When add something to another.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Say that again?
When you 1 + 1, what is called?
Adding, yeah, just adding.
Yes.
Adding.
The adding of all frequencies.
Gotcha. So yeah.
We have the 20 to 20,000 hertz frequencies.
Yes.
All together. So more frequencies you have together, more washy sound you have, more far far from the single note, the tonal note that you need to avoid, because when you're playing, you don't want to sound one particular tone.
Yes. So you're saying that the pressed shape allows there to be fewer individual strikes, which gives you more
highs.
What's that?
More highs
and more. It's like an A sound is like a chime, like kind of ringing, pure, yes, sort of sound. And if you, yes, were to shape, you could shape two cymbals, one with a press and one with hand hammering. The hand hammered one will not give you the purity that you need to get the A custom sound.
Yes, let's talk a little bit of sound waves. So the highs waves are so teeny and less energy than the biggest low waves. So it tends to disappear easily. If you have some bumps in your cymbal, you're not able to produce the sound because it's just died.
Yeah.
This is less hammering. This is why we're using the press. This is why you're using the rotary machine.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's not that one's bad and one's good. You know, obviously people really like the hand hammered sound, but it's really about tone.
Yeah, tone, yes. So we have the depressed dice. We have the initial shape. And right now we have dice for the hi-hats, the crashes, rides, and hi-hats. This almost the same profile.
Mm.
Proportional for the sizes.
Right, yeah. Interesting, yeah. I've kind of wondered if it would make sense to have, if the blanks could be pressed to where they're barely, you know, they start here, they're barely this before, and the hydraulic press just gets them from here to here.
Yes.
And hammering takes them where you want them or whatever. And
yes, yes. But you can control easily.
Mm.
Sound.
Yeah.
You can control easily the sound.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty fascinating, because I know a lot of the, you know, a lot of, I would imagine all or most of the major manufacturers are pressing most of their cymbals. And as far as, you know, if we're talking Zildjian, Sabian, maybe, I mean, I've heard that Pisey does a fair amount of, like, you know, it's a machine hammer, but it's a person by hand, you know, operating it. But obviously the Turkish makers, they've got a bunch of guys in a room just swinging hammers, you know, to, you know, okay, yeah, maybe not. Maybe that's just what they show us.
They're flipping to hammering machines.
Okay, they're changing. Okay.
Okay. Also, a lot of work doing by hand, but a lot of work doing by machine hammering, because can you understand that they look at the factory as business, not as a passion.
Right, right.
So they need to be productive. And if you are hiring people, you need to training, and take care of people is very difficult. They prefer to flip to the machines.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how has this transition taken place fairly recently? Because I know that they've been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Because I mean, the perception you get is that, you know, all the Turkish stuff is still handmade, like the old days.
Yes. For real, who cares?
Yeah.
They're still doing good sound cymbals. They're still doing, if you want a Turkish sound, you must buy blanks from Turkey. You must buy cymbals from Turkey. That's all. The charcoals and the marks, the inlays and the blanks. Okay, this is become part of the cymbal, part of the sound.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying earlier when I asked you the question, was that these Turkish blanks gave me a certain vibe, but I find that yours and it sounds like it's because of the process that you do and how meticulous everything is. I get a cleaner sound as a baseline. I can always make it sound more dirty or complex or dark. I can do that with my processes, but to be able to start from more of a blank slate, no pun intended, starting from a blank slate that doesn't have as much inconsistencies. And, you know, I've heard that the charcoal and wood fire can add impurities into the bronze more so than your process with propane. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes. I have more clean process here. My blank is better than the Turkish one. No, it's different.
Different. Yes.
Just that. You try it and you pick one.
Right. Right. And I tend to be, you know, my ear has changed so much since I started, but I am sort of gravitating more towards, I would say that if you were to compare my work to a lot of other makers' work, I really do emphasize trying to have a clarity to my cymbals, that I don't like the sounds that are a little bit too wild, out of control, and maybe stick definition is a little bit too muddy. And I really am aiming for, you know, stick, because I'm making thin cymbals. I mean, you just mentioned 1.5 millimeter thick. I'm ordering them at 1.2, 1.3 millimeters thick.
Yeah.
I'm ordering thin blanks, and then I'm still, you know, doing some lathing. So I'm in the realm of thin cymbals, but for me, it has to be all about clarity, because it's so easy with that stuff to get just out of control, dark, nasty sounds that you can't really use on a gig and have it do what you need it to do.
Yes. You need to control by hand.
Yes.
You need, because the cymbals you are making is you need to figure out the spots on the cymbal, where to strike, where the hot spot, where to, you need to control the beast.
Yes. Yeah.
No, you need to control to understand it's alive. You need to understand this is the beautiful thing in the art.
Yes. Yes.
The one thing is, this is beautiful.
Yes. And I think that when, you know, because I made some pretty interesting sounds that I, you know, the first 50 cymbals that I made, say, there were some ones in that first batch of 50 that I ever made that I would still stand behind today and say, you know, I mean, I had a lot that, you know, found their way onto the garbage heap that I never sold. I only ever sold ones that I, you know, could stand behind. But there was a batch even in that first 50 that I love the sounds of. I love what I was able to accomplish without knowing anything about what I was doing. I was just swinging a hammer, hoping to God that it would work and it would sound okay to me. And that's kind of the beast, and the beast before I had any control over the beast. You know, it was just kind of a wild animal. It came out however, and now I've been getting more and more control, and I find that I've lost the beast, and I kind of want to bring the beast back and kind of put him back in the work so that he's there to create chaos a little bit more, but then I can do it in a way that's contained into an instrument that will do the practical things that we need a cymbal to do. If we're playing a jazz gig or a rock gig or whatever gig we're doing, there's some parameters that our cymbals need to hit in order to do the job well, so that, you know, you get hired back, you know, you get,
yes,
you know, there's also room for that kind of wildness and chaos that I'm just interested in that. That's kind of where my head's at in my process lately.
You know, there's two things you need to control. You are talking about the way you are doing the cymbal, but there's another thing. When a drummer buys a cymbal, he needs to understand how to control that animal.
Yes. It's half a relationship. We're dealing with, yeah.
You a kind of, you allowed the drummer being part of your art.
Wow. That's a very interesting way of putting it. Yeah. And that's the other thing that we can get so caught up in, how the cymbal's made and getting it perfect. But we forget that it's going to have a life of its own. It's going to leave my shop and it's going to exist. And the drummer who bought it might sell it, or he might keep it for 50 years. You know,
I'm bringing back the two things. When it's done, it's done. When you finish the symbol, you finish the symbol. Because when a drummer want to pick some symbol, he will figure out the best sound for his own sound. Sometimes it's awful for you, but it's beautiful for him.
Yes. Yes, that's true. It's very true.
You need to understand when you finish the symbol, okay, it's finished. Put it apart.
Yes.
Another one, okay.
And move on. I've wasted way too much time not heeding that advice and just obsessing over one symbol, going, it's got to be perfect. I got to figure this out. Got to make it right. And it, you know, it rarely ever works the way I'm hoping it will. And it ends up with me just wasting a bunch of time. Whenever I talk to a newer cymbalsmith, I just say, like, make your first cymbal and make a decision that it's done and never touch it again. The first cymbal I ever made, I reworked probably 5 or 6 times, and now it's a piece of garbage. It's terrible. But if I had left it, you know, kind of as a relic of where I was, it would be something amazing to look back on, you know, and see. And if you can kind of move in this way where you just, like you're saying, decide it's finished, put it aside, move on to the next one, you'll be able to actually have like a catalog of what you've done. And you'll be able to look back and kind of see the various stages in your development and maybe even learn something from your former self, like learn something that maybe you had when you were young, you were newer in the process that you lost somewhere along the way. And I wish I had done that.
Yeah. Let's say is a passion. So you need to go in the flow.
Mm. Yeah.
Definitely. Just let it be. You know, you're gonna understand everything. And the drummer that picked the symbol, you understand because he's in a flow and everything we put together and it will work.
Yeah. Francisco, this has been incredible. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. We could talk for 8 hours, I'm sure, and not even discuss half of what there is to discuss, but
not even talk about hammering techniques.
I know, yeah, we didn't even touch that. That's like one of the biggest things there is. Maybe that's for part two. We'll come back and do another interview at some point and talk about hammering techniques.
We can do an interview in the foundry.
Yes, I'll come to Brazil and we'll do it in person interview.
Nice.
So everybody who's listening to this, definitely you got to check out Demene Cymbals in Brazil. You're going to be hearing a lot more from Francisco in the future because he's helping all the indie cymbal smiths in America and Canada and the UK. He's becoming an integral part of what we do. So you got to get hip to him now. And obviously your cymbals, I played your cymbals at Chicago last year and they were fantastic. I mean, I could not speak more highly of them as far as being instruments of the highest quality. So where can people find you or reach out to you or talk to you? What's the best way to get in contact?
Thank you so much for being here and to let me to speak a lot of my stuffs.
Yeah.
And let's spread the word and keep hammering. That's all.
Awesome. Love it. So demenecymbals.com, is that where they can find you, find your work?
Yes. Instagram also.
So awesome. You guys check it out. demenecymbals.com, Instagram at demenecymbals. And we'll see you guys next time. This has been the Reverie Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.